Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Finally this hour, a new voice coming to public radio stations around the country. Tanzina Vega is the new host of the Tech Takeaway, which you hear at 1 p.m. on NPR News. Steph Curtis talked with her about her career at CNN and at the New York Times, where she managed to create her own beat, focusing on America's shifting demographics.
And I remember the first story I did for the Times in that section was really looking at Asian Americans who were facing elder care issues, right? And sort of the cultural stresses that they felt, particularly if they were second generation, where, you know, there's a cultural expectation that you will take care of your elders at home. But in the United States, there's a very different expectation. And so that story was something that struck a chord with a lot of the Asian American readers of the Times. And it was something that sort of set the course for how I began to approach stories about race. Then Ferguson happened. And that to me, I look at the tone of race in this country as sort of a pre and post Ferguson in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, I went to Ferguson. I was there for about 8 days with other colleagues of mine, as we tend to do, sort of flood the zone, and really seeing what would then become the birth of so many of these movements like Black Lives Matter in particular. I took that and went to CNN and decided to focus much more on what I thought is one of the biggest issues, and I think we're going to bring that to the show, to the takeaway, is looking at the wealth gap, right? Mm-hmm. And I started looking at a number of different, you know, issues that are grounded in wealth, right? And where wealth comes from. It tells us a story about our history. It tells us a story about our demographics. And it tells us a story of a lot of the tension that we see today.
One thing that you've talked about before in interviews is about the elitism of media. And I was wondering how you're going to combat this now that you've asked in the past year for the mic to be passed to people of color, to women of color, and now you've got it. How can you combat that elitism that we hear day to day that people don't even see every day on your show?
Well, I'm grateful for the mic. I really am. It's a tremendous opportunity, and it's a humbling experience as well. And it's a responsibility at the same time. And I recognize all of those things because getting here wasn't easy. There's definitely, you know, and I don't want to suggest that every single person in the media is, you know, a wealthy elite person, because that's necessarily not true.
I think we're really read that way. I mean,
we are. And we're read that way. And I think particularly the larger news organizations that that some of the ones that I've worked for and others do have a tendency to stay within those circles, right? And, you know, getting a degree from the right school is really important, and making sure that you have the right connections and maybe you have a legacy of journalists in your family. All of those things don't suggest that you wouldn't be a good journalist. But one of the holes that we saw the media at writ large, you know, having to confront in this past election cycle, for example, was the quote-unquote white working class. And so all of the journalists that I knew were freaking out about having missed that story, and why didn't we get this story, and why don't we have anyone on the ground, and, you know, in places like, you know, Minnesota, really talking to Americans who aren't on the two coasts. And I think that was a huge oversight. I think a lot of that was because we just don't talk about class in the newsroom. You know, we talk about race, but we don't often talk about class. And I think, you know, for what can I do? I mean, I'm sitting in the chair, and I hope to open the conversation to invite new voices to the table in terms of experts and other people. I hope to provide context for these issues so people understand, which is why I was talking about wealth earlier, because it does play such a role that we may not be aware of. But at the same time, I'm only one person, right? We need news organizations themselves to get out of their comfort zone and start looking at public schools. I'm a graduate of public school, you know, through and through, all the way up to my master's. And in fact, the CUNY, the City University of New York Graduate School of Journalism, is now, you know, pumping out grads who went there because they could afford to go there. And so I think the affordability of the profession needs to be looked at. I think we need to start doing things like paying, you know, making sure we pay interns, we pay people on time. All of these things are important, and that we don't focus on only one type of sound or one type of person. But I'm just one person, so we have to make sure that we're all invested in making that change.
So you worked with Jill Abramson to create a beat at the New York Times. Do you kind of see this as a chance to create a new show with your team? Is it going to be a lot like The Takeaway has been for the past, how long has it been around? Like a decade?
10 years.
10 years. Wow.
Yeah, they just celebrated their 10-year anniversary.
Well, happy anniversary.
And then I came in.
Yeah.
Well, I think you make something new. You know, I joke around a little bit here, but by putting a new person in the chair. So that's what we did. We also have a fantastic team of producers here who are really smart and eager to start exploring areas akin to what we would consider beats, right, in journalism. And so those are areas of expertise, areas of interest that you might want to develop. And so I think, you know, if we start approaching the show in this way, one of the things we'd like to do is make sure that our producers slash reporters, because I think they obviously do both roles, are able to go out there and do the type of storytelling that they would like to do. That's a little bit more immersive. That's a little bit more narrative. That extends itself to, you know, to longer pieces, perhaps, than we're used to hearing. That's not to suggest we won't do breaking news and that we won't cover the news of the day. We absolutely will do that and we'll continue to do that. Our listeners can expect us to do that. But I think you will start to hear different sounds, different voices, different types of media, perhaps things that are much more immersive and narrative. And I think that that's, you know, we're working on making that happen. And hopefully our listeners will notice the change.
One of my colleagues here who's a producer wanted me to ask about news fatigue. And she said, I feel like there's so many people who are so exhausted by the news cycle right now and news fatigue. And how does she see that? And how does she and her team counteract that?
Yes. I think we're all exhausted. And frankly, I think if the United States took a month off collectively and just we all went away for a month and came back, we'd probably all feel a lot better because I think our country as a whole is stressed out. I don't care what side of the political divide you're on. We are under a tremendous amount of stress, and it's daily. And it is, I think, in particular, it's because a lot of the institutions that we sort of would once assume would be working in our best interest or, you know, sort of would maintain a certain amount of distance, i.e. the media and or the federal government, have now, you know, are themselves duking it out, right? And so I think everyday Americans are absolutely stressed. Narrative storytelling is one way to change that, right? Where you can say, you know what, let's pause and let's listen. What's really happening on the ground? For example, a producer here did a fantastic piece on the Ohio teacher strike, right? And really got a lot of voices and, you know, took a lot of time to talk to people. And so that to me is one way to approach it. The other thing is to say, hey, guess what? Not everything is bad. Right. And so we're looking at ways to also bring in some fun elements to the show, some light to the show. Right. So, you know, there are certain things that I'm sure we all post on our Facebook pages that make us laugh. There are tweets sometimes that I see that make me laugh. Right. There are things that, you know, throughout the craziness and despite how overwhelmed we are and how stressed we are, it's amazing to me that human beings are still able to have a sense of humor and do good things. And so we do that, right? And I think it's important for us to kind of acknowledge those things along the way.
Well, I'm excited to hear what you've got in store for us. And I'm glad they passed the mic to you. And I see on Twitter that you want to go to lots of brunches and day parties. So I hope no one invites you out to anything after 9 p.m. this entire summer.
I've already made that abundantly clear. I won't even pick up the phone. I'll be asleep. I have to be here at 6:30 a.m. So not going to happen. But
all
thank
right.
you so much.
Break a leg.
Thank you. I appreciate it.